Every person has a price, they say. What would you be willing to do for $10,000? Two-thirds of Americans polled would agree to at least one, some to several of the following. 25% polled would abandon their entire family. This is for $10 million, would abandon their entire family. 25% would abandon their church for $10 million. 23% would become prostitutes for a week or more for $10 million. 16% would give up their American citizenship for $10 million. 16% would leave their spouses for $10 million. 10% would withhold testimony and let a murderer go free for $10 million. 7% would kill a stranger for $10 million. 3% would put up their own children for adoption for $10 million. We want to talk this morning about personal integrity. The critical importance of remaining loyal to God no matter what. We're just going to deal with one passage in James. That's the one verse, James 1:12. And then we're going to look at some other passages also as we go through. The first thing we're going to do is to look at some proverbs from the book of Proverbs, some proverbs that deal with integrity. These are not long, but I think that they have some important things to tell us this morning. First of all, Proverbs 10:9. He who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. What does this tell us? That if we are people of integrity, it provides security for ourselves. Provides security. Proverbs 11:3, the integrity of the upright will guide them, but the crookedness of the treacherous will destroy them. Integrity means self-preservation. Proverbs 20, verse 7, a righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. If we are people of integrity, there's a blessing for our family. If we're people of integrity. Proverbs 19:1. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. A poor man of integrity is better than a foul-mouthed fool. And the last one, Proverbs 28, verse 6, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. A poor man of integrity is better than a crooked tycoon. Apparently, many of the people in our society don't think that, though. What a tragedy. Well, we're going to look at four individuals. The first will be James. And he's going to talk to us about integrity in talking. Now, our mouths are kind of two-sided. We've already looked in James how that with the same mouth we bless God, but we curse people who are made in God's own image. The mouth can be a source of great blessing to others, and it can be a source of cursing. We're going to look particularly this morning at this business about telling the truth and ask the question, how do people know when you're telling the truth? Here's what James said. First of all, he prohibits oath-taking, but above all, my brethren, do not swear. Now, this is not talking about, in this case, profanity. That's not that kind of swearing. It's about taking an oath. Let's go through this verse and then talk about why people use an oath. The examples of oaths, don't swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath. When you do that, you're trying to convince someone you're telling the truth. Okay? The proper alternative is perpetual truthfulness. But your yes is to be yes, and your no should be no. The benefit of perpetual truthfulness, so that you may not fall under judgment. Now, we have courts of law, and they used to have people swear on Bibles. They don't do that anymore. Where's John? When did they stop having people swear on a Bible? Do you know? A long time ago. Like how many years ago? Okay. They would used to place their hand on a Bible and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The idea was that if you were under oath, you're more apt to tell the truth than if you're not under oath. Now, most of us don't go to a court of law, and we don't, but sometimes, you know, we say things, I swear, God's truth, I'm telling the truth. And James says you shouldn't need to do that. You shouldn't need to do that. Now, I don't think James is forbidding us to go to a court of law as a witness and take an oath there. I don't think that's what he's talking about. He's talking about your everyday life. You shouldn't have times when you tell the truth. If you swear a certain oath, then you have to tell the truth. But otherwise, you don't have to tell the truth. He's saying your yes should be yes and your no should be no. You shouldn't have to swear an oath to prove you're telling the truth. Application. You shouldn't need to swear on a stack of Bibles to prove you're telling the truth. Rather, you ought to tell the truth no matter what. And I would say this, if there's something you can't tell the truth about, then don't say anything. Or say, I'd really rather not comment on that. But whatever you say, I don't think we're obligated to tell everything we know, but whatever we say must be truthful. Here's kind of an interesting story. There was a man who was a public safety director and he's police chief of Johnson City. And when he was a regular police officer, he and a partner pulled over someone who was an unlicensed motorist. And they asked the man to follow them to the police station. In the meantime, there was an APB and all points bulletin about a wanted person, and they saw this car was out there somewhere, and they were directed to go where these two police cars took off like crazy following this guy, this fugitive. And they stopped him, and they arrested him, and minutes later, this first motorist came by, and he said, if you all will just tell me how to get to the station, I'll wait for you there. He says, I'm having a heck of a time keeping up with you. And the point I want to make, there's an honest man. There's an honest man. He could have used his head. These guys are off on this chase. They'll never catch up with me. But he's an honest man. You ought to tell the truth no matter what. All right, now we're going to talk about another man. This is completely outside the book of James. It's from the book of Genesis, Integrity in the Face of Temptation. We all know the story about Joseph. Joseph was a young man who was the favorite son of his father. But his brothers hated him and despised him because God had given him some dreams that he was going to be ruler over them. And they didn't appreciate that. And of course, they also didn't appreciate the fact that he was their father's favorite son. And so you know the story that they sold him as a slave down into Egypt. That's recorded in Genesis 39:1-6. I'm not going to read all of that story. But he wound up being bought by the chief officer in Pharaoh's bodyguard. His name was Potiphar. And Joseph was faithful where he was. He did such a good job. And God blessed him. And God gave him favor in the sight of Potiphar, and Potiphar put him over his whole house. Everything that he had, the only thing Potiphar reserved the right to do, he says, I want to choose my own menu. But otherwise, Joseph was in charge of everything. Well, that leads me to this conclusion. God can bless us even if our own family members reject us. And that's sad when that happens. But God can bless us even if our own family members reject us. Now, in verses 7 to 12, we have a woman who is Potiphar's wife, and she has a real sex drive. I'm being very blunt. And Joseph is a very good-looking guy, and she propositions him. And I'm going to take the trouble to read that, verses 7 to 12. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" It came about as she spoke to Joseph day after day. This wasn't a one-time proposition. It happened day after day after day. Now, put yourself in Joseph's shoes. He is a slave. He has no rights. This is his master's wife asking him. If he resists her, he could get in trouble with his master. If he gives in to her, he could get in trouble with his master. I mean, he's in a no-win situation. Hopefully she would never tell, but this is tremendous pressure. But day after day, Joseph refuses. And it came about as she spoke to Joseph day after day that he did not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. He deliberately scheduled his events so that he wouldn't have to be around her. Now, it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household was there inside. She caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And what did he do? He left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. Now, Joseph was doing the right thing. In 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18, it says, "Flee," we're commanded, "flee immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside of his own body, but he who is immoral sins against his own body. Don't you know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who lives within you? Wherefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which belong to God." So when we indulge in immorality, we are violating the temple of God. We're sinning against our own body. Joseph didn't have that truth, but he knew that to do this was to sin against God. Well, what happened? Mrs. Potiphar was angry because he wouldn't listen to her, so she decided to get even. She decided to frame him. I'll read this to you. Verse 13, Proverbs 39. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he," meaning her husband, "has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. It came about when he heard that I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside." So she left his garment beside her until his master came home. When she spoke to him with these words, "The Hebrew slave with whom you brought to us came into me to make sport of me, and it happened as I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled outside." Now, she didn't say a word of truth, did she? She completely distorted what was going on. I have a lesson there. People who entice you to commit immorality are motivated by self-gratification, not love. There's no way that she loved Joseph. She was only interested in self-gratification. It was not love. We toss the word love around in our society way too carelessly. And a lot of what goes as love is not love at all. It's biology. And that's what her situation was. Here's another lesson we can learn. If someone cannot be trusted to be moral, he or she cannot be trusted to be truthful either. Character flaws rarely happen one at a time. If we start letting down the bar in this area, it's going to affect other areas of her life. She was both immoral and dishonest. She had two character flaws at least. Well, Potiphar, understandably, he's not going to vote against his wife, throws Joseph into prison. In fact, she must have put on a pretty good act. Verse 19, it came about when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him, saying, "This is what your slave did to me." His anger burned. He believed his wife. Personal integrity does not exempt us from misrepresentation and injustice. Joseph was a man of personal integrity, but that did not exempt him from being misrepresented and suffering injustice himself. I want you to know that. If you're going to follow Jesus, that doesn't mean that people won't misunderstand you and misrepresent you and that you'll be treated fairly all the time. You won't be. It won't happen. Well, in verses 21 to 23, the Lord blessed Joseph anyway, even when he was in prison. The Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. Well, that's amazing. What a remarkable story of Joseph, who is a man of integrity under tremendous duress. Personal integrity permits God's blessing no matter what. Doesn't mean it'll be easy, but it'll permit his blessing. Now, let's go to another man, Job. Integrity in the face of tragedy. We're familiar with the story of Job. We know that he was a godly and upright man, but he was very, very wealthy. And Satan came to God, and God said, "Satan, where have you been?" He said, "Well, I've been walking to and fro in the earth." And God said, "Well, have you encountered my servant Job? What do you think of him? He's a man of great integrity." Here's what God said. "Have you considered my servant Job? For there's no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." Well, let's talk about Job here a little bit. First of all, what is his character like? His character, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, fearing God and turning away from evil. His possessions and his position were outlined in verses 2 to 3. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. His possessions included 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And that man was the greatest of all the men of the East. In verses 4 to 5, we learn about his family. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. It came about when the days of feasting had completed their cycle that Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "Perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did continually. This guy was a devoted man of God, and he sought to have his family follow God also. Well, in verses 6 to 19... Job loses his possessions and his family. I'm not going to read the entire account. God, when he was quizzing Satan, and Satan said, "Well, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him, and has his house and all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands. His possessions have increased in the land. But put forth your hand now and touch all that he has, all his possessions, and he will surely curse you to your face." And God said, "Behold, all he has is in your power, only do not put forth your hand on him." So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. So without reading every single instance there, we know that there's a tornado or some kind of a massive windstorm that came and destroyed the home where his kids were all were. It destroyed them, every one of his kids, not one was left alive. Another messenger said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys were feeding. The Sabaeans attacked them. They slew the servants with the edge of the sword. I alone have escaped. Another servant says, fire consumed the sheep. Another one said, the Chaldeans formed three raiding bands and ran off with all your camels and slew all the servants. I am alone escaped. And then the last one came and said, your sons and your daughters were killed by this huge whirlwind. And what did Job say? In verse 20, he said, first of all, he arose and he tore his robe. He shaved his head. All these were signs of grief. He fell to the ground and he worshipped. He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. And God's assessment when Satan came back the second time was, have you considered my servant Job? There's no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. He still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause. Well, what did Satan say? Well, first of all, let's give ourselves a lesson here. Integrity means loyalty to God, even if you lose all your possessions. Loyalty to God, even if you lose all your possessions. Now, in verses 4 to 8, Satan bargains with God to attack Job's personal health. And he smote Job with boils from the top of his head to the bottom of the soles of his feet. This man was a man of great misery. And yet, in chapter 2, verses 9 to 10, he maintains his integrity. His wife said to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die, Job. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God and not adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Integrity means loyalty to God, even if you lose your health. Loyalty to God, even if you lose your health. I know the New Testament says a great deal about healing, and there are a lot of miracles there, but here's a miracle God has not performed yet. He's not gotten rid of death. Unless the Lord comes first, every one of us here is going to die. That means at some point you're going to either have a traffic accident or some other kind of an accident or some tragedy, a hurricane, whatever, or you're going to have poor health and you're going to die. So never say you have to leave your health in God's hands. Integrity means loyalty to God even if you lose your health. Even if you lose your health. All right, let's look at Daniel. Oh, I think I had something I wanted to say about that. There's a man named Dawson Trotman. Was he the founder of the Navigators? That's what I was thinking. Some of you have heard of the Navigators. Joe and Mary Lee have been involved in the Navigators for many years, and the founder was a godly man named Dawson Trotman. Navigators used to have a campsite, they may still do it, at Scroon Lake, New York. And they'd invite campers to come there. And there's a situation where there's a boat overturned out there, and Dawson Trotman, the founder of this organization, happened to be out there, and he dove in the water to try to save her. I think he wound up saving her, but in the process, he lost his life. And the news of this swept across the campsite like wildfire. And there are tears of disbelief in a lot of young Christians' faces. And someone reportedly heard Lila Trotman, his widow, say, she suddenly walked upon the scene. A close friend shouted, "Oh, Lila, he's gone. Dawson's gone." And she replied in calm assurance, the words of Psalm 115:3, "But our God is in the heavens. He does whatever he pleases." And there's a woman who kept her integrity in the face of personal tragedy and the loss of her husband's life. She relied on the hand of her sovereign Lord, who again had done what he had pleased. Well, let's look at Daniel, the last character, integrity in the face of government tyranny. We know the story of Daniel, that he was a captive, a Jewish captive, and that he had gone to, he'd been taken captive to Babylon, and he served for many years under Nebuchadnezzar and then under Persian kings. The last one that we know about is Darius. And something happened in his life, and he was tossed into a den of lions. Let's kind of review briefly what happened there. It's recorded in the book of Daniel, chapter 6. In the first three verses, Daniel does such a good job, he's promoted to one of the three highest positions in the government, and the king is thinking to put him over everything. Well, this aroused the jealousy and the envy of others, and they decided, we're going to practice the politics of personal destruction. We're going to dig up some dirt on this guy, find out there's something he's done that we can put it on the internet and make the press write about it, and we can get rid of Daniel. But they looked, and they looked, and they looked, and they could find nothing. Finally said, there's only one way we're going to get at this guy, and that's through his religion, because he faithfully prayed to God three times a day. So they made a plot, and their plot was to get pass a law, a brief law, that no one would be able to ask anything of God or man, but only of the king. They got the king to conclude that this is a good idea, and he signed it into law. Well, it was flattering, but it was hardly a good law. Loyalty to God does not exempt us from government tyranny. And I think that's going to be increasingly the case in our country. Loyalty to God does not exempt us from government tyranny. Well, in verses 10 to 15, Daniel remains loyal to God. When Daniel knew that the document was signed, Daniel 6:10, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. They approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast in the lion's den? The king replied, "This statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked." Then they answered, and they spoke before the king, and I'm sure they had a smug smile on their faces. "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but he keeps making his petition three times a day." Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed. He set his mind on how he could deliver Daniel. He kept working till sunset to find a way to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed." Daniel remained true to God, and sometimes loyalty to God means disobeying the government. Sometimes loyalty to God means disobeying the government. And sometime you and I have to make a choice. I'm not saying when or where, how soon, but sometime it could well mean, as our government drifts farther and farther away and our society drifts farther and farther away from God and the Bible, loyalty to God will mean disobeying the government. And then you'll have to do what Daniel did. You'll have to suffer the consequences. The king, in verses 16 to 18, throws Daniel into the den of lions. Stone, and the king said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." Stone was brought over and laid on the mouth of the den. The king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. No entertainment was brought before him. His sleep fled from him. Loyalty to God does not exempt us from execution by the government. I mean, the plan was for Daniel to be executed. So loyalty to God does not exempt us from execution, being put to death by the government. Verses 19 to 24, God delivers Daniel. The king rose at dawn at the break of day, and the king spoke and said to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Daniel spoke, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime." Well, we know that the king then got Daniel out of there and cast all those men and their wives and their children and tossed them down into the lion's den, and not a one of them hit the ground. They are crunched before they hit the ground. There are times when God will deliver us miraculously. There are times when God will deliver us miraculously. Darius, in verse 25 to 28, honors Daniel's God. He says, "I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and enduring forever. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So, God gains great honor when we are loyal to him. So what are we trying to say with this message? We are trying to say that we need to be people of integrity. Integrity means that we remain loyal to God and to his values no matter what happens. God calls each of us today to be people of integrity. During China's Boxer Rebellion of 1900, insurgents captured a mission station. They blocked all the gates but one, and in front of the gate, they placed a cross flat on the ground. The word was passed to those inside that anyone who trampled on the cross would be permitted their freedom and their life, but any refusing to do that would be shot. Terribly frightened, the first seven students trampled the cross under their feet and were allowed to go free. But the eighth student, a young girl, refused to commit this act of sacrilege. Kneeling beside the cross in prayer for strength, she rose and carefully moved around the cross and went out to face the firing squad. Strengthened by her remaining, or her example, every one of the 92 remaining students followed her to the firing squad. Integrity means that we remain loyal to God and to his values no matter what. Let us pray and ask God to help us to be people of integrity. Dear God, we realize that there are times when circumstances will be such that we'll be tempted not to be people of integrity. Help us to resolve, O Lord, no matter what the cost, to be loyal to you and loyal to your values. I pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.